Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hello, Weirdsville. It's time once again for our festive throwing down of our own accolades. It's our anniversary party. We thank you for tuning in and joining us. And it is, of course, myself, Adam Beebe, and your other co-host, Mr. Barry Johnston, the Smiling Sensei. And we are very fortunate, very blessed today to be joined by, I don't know, you can't see my hand gestures. It's very gesticular and very presentful on the podcast because it's all audio. But you can imagine me doing these grand gestures, welcoming our guest, two of our awesome special correspondents. We've got Truth Trek and Tilly, the Queen of List, and special correspondent Bobby. I forgot what Bobby's other accolades were because it's been
a
while.
I'm just a weirdo.
That's right. Bobby's just our weirdo. So, so Bobby, it's been a minute since you've been with us. So let's hear about what's been going on. What have you been up to? Wink, wink. I know what you've been up to, but what do you want to share with Weirdsville?
I went to the catacombs in Paris.
Oh, cool!
Great time. I brought a Instax camera, those little ones that pop out the skinny Polaroids.
Oh, okay.
And apparently, you're not allowed to have flash photography down there because it messes somehow with the skulls and bones. Oh. And but I didn't realize, I think because I have ADHD, some things don't even trigger, so every time I did it there was a huge flash, but in my brain there was no flash, so I just walked around the entire catacombs with my Instax Polaroid flashing all of these skulls and bones.
How did they turn out?
Oh, pretty cool. I have a journal. I'll show you guys later.
Yeah. Nice.
But yeah, some of them turned out real neat. Other ones are pretty blurry. But my partner came with me, and I was not drinking on the trip, so he was having all of my drinks. we went to multiple wine bars and wine tastings, and so he got everything I got. And by the time we got to the catacombs, it was the last event of the night. It was pretty late. And he was pretty trashed. he's not one of those drunks who slurs or, like, you know, I can hardly tell when he's trashed. It's really difficult to gauge.
Yeah.
So about halfway through the tour in the catacombs, I noticed he was missing. So I'm like, oh shit. So I backtrack and I hear like a stream of water, and I was like, oh, I didn't know there was water.
Oh no.
Calling him, I'm like, hey, insert name here multiple times, and I hear him go, hey, be quiet, I don't want anyone to hear me. And I go over and I find him, and he's just pissed.
Oh my gosh. Very, very, very French, it seems, you know. But
yeah,
really embracing the culture there. Just
wow.
Actually, yeah, people piss up and down the streets in Paris all the time. Like, you come around a corner and there's someone just walking and pissing. It's bizarre.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But yeah, so he did that in the catacombs, and I didn't really know what to do or what to say. That's when I realized he was trashed. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's no way. He is so freaked out and paranoid. He has, like, we have to sleep with all of the blinds closed and windows closed in the house because he ever since he was a kid, he's seen a face in the window. And he wakes up and it's there. So we can't, you can't have open windows and open blinds in my house. So he's very freaked out by these things. There's like pictures of him when he's a kid with this thing that he used to talk to when he was little. His mom thinks it's hilarious and keeps one of the pictures up on her fridge. And he hates her for it because he sees it every time he goes over there. But that's it. Maybe that's a story for another day.
That is definitely a story for another time.
I'll ask him more details. I think he'd be too scared to talk about it, but I can get more. But anyway, so he's a little paranoid about stuff like that. So there's no way if he was sober, he would have done that. Like, that's not, you know. So anyway, he's trashed. He's pissing in the catacombs.
I would have done the same thing, by the way. Yeah. I got no shame.
It's not like you can easily find a way out.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was going to ask. Like, how long is that tour? Is it, do you know how long?
I'd say it's about an hour. Like, wow. You're really in there.
Wow.
And you go down these really skinny spiral steps. It's real cold and freaky. And there's some portions where you can tell, like, there was graffiti everywhere. People go in there and graffiti and mark stuff.
Okay.
But, yeah, it was just I got pretty freaked out once I realized, like, oh, my God, I'm in the catacombs and he's just desecrating every single grave in here. And all of the places we were staying in, they were like Airbnbs, so they weren't all hotels, and they were, you know, just eerie and old and cold and I don't know. So we get back and go to bed. Everything's okay. Next morning we wake up and I tell him that he was peeing in the catacombs, and he just like went so pale. And would not forgive me. I don't think he forgives me to this day for letting him pee in the catacombs. But I don't know how I would have stopped him, honestly.
He's
What, are you going to walk up to him and just cinch it off and just hold it?
Yeah. Switch his aim around. Like, there was nothing for me to do.
Yeah. Stay clear.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
We were... surprisingly, though, like, it just wasn't, that was concerning, but there was nothing strange happening in Paris. I get more freaked out in the U.S. just, like, walking outside than I did even with all that going on there.
Yeah.
Did he see the face that from his childhood, and was it wearing a beret?
No, he didn't see it the whole time we were there. He did see it when we got back, but the windows were open, so that could have been a totally different thing. So it was, you know, a weird situation, but not particularly freaky, which is
Who's buried down there? Is this like clergy and who?
Yeah, from what I understood, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, it would be clergy. There was, as far as I know, like all of the really special bones were elsewhere.
Okay.
Are
they just like sticking out of the walls, or are they encased in?
They're piled and encased. Some of them are loose, but for the most part, they've all got like this fence thing around them, but they're all sticking out of the fence.
Wow.
But those are in the areas where like they have it blocked off. You can't even walk back there.
Okay.
But I mean, it's, you're seeing bones for miles and miles. Oh, there were, cool designs, like bone designs that they did too. So they put it down there and they put them down in like crosses, and they had, really neat, like, they made sculptures basically with the bones, which was really cool.
Wow.
It gave me a lot of ideas for furniture. It was lovely.
That's wild.
I could be wrong, but I think it was just basically mass grave storage or skeleton storage after, like, they would disinter bodies for like building and stuff whenever they would have like graveyards, they would dig them up. I could be wrong, but but yeah, that goes back a long time. And you know, it's just, I mean, it's hundreds of thousands of bones and skulls and everything down there. And it's just so interesting because it's such a different way to think about death and, you know, the body post, you know, decay that they do, that they've done, and, you know, how they interacted with the dead. And it is a respectful way. I mean, it, you know, they put them down there and they did the, you know, the crosses and such as a way to honor them. And also their beliefs. So it's just really, I don't know. It's really cool. Yeah. I want to go, but at the same time, I'm not really great about like, I'm not good at, great about heights, and I'm not great about being underground. I guess it's a little bit claustrophobic, but I haven't done anything like that in a long time.
Is it all like stone, like, you know, stone pathways, like stones above your head type thing? Is it, does it feel
no, like... it was like dirt.
Oh, really?
Like really, really packed.
Wow.
Dirt. There was, there were some like walkways that had stone, but I think that was after the fact.
Okay.
But then again, my memory could be bad. I could look at pictures and realize stone. But I just don't remember that. I remember it being very much like just being in a cave.
Right.
So maybe like natural rock, not necessarily stone put in there.
Okay.
And it was very tiny. Adam, you would definitely have to duck. I was smooth sailing through the whole thing. I had about this much clearance, but I'm not even 5 feet tall, so there's that. But you would definitely be ducking.
That would be tough.
I have to go to the double X sized catacombs. So the catacombs.
Just a skateboard or and you can just sit on it.
There you go. How many people are in your group?
Like eight or nine.
Oh, okay. That's not that many. I thought there'd be more than that. That's good.
It was pretty small.
Yeah, I'd rather have a small group, I think, walking through that.
I'm surprised nobody yelled at me for the flash. I heard them yell at someone else and call them disrespectful, and I was a little bit behind them. Mm. So looking back, maybe they were saying that loudly enough for me to hear.
Oh, yeah.
but... It didn't register. I remember even seeing the guy with the flash, and I was like, why?
Yeah.
No.
How was the food there? Did you get a chance to eat some French cuisine? Was it good?
Yes, I did. Yep. I had some, like, that was the one thing I splurged on there. Like $300, $400 tasting menus, and oh, my God. Yes, amazing. So good.
Did you eat the escargot? So
I did, and I had foie gras.
Oh, how was that? I've never had foie gras. Was it good?
So, yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't taste like anything I've ever tasted before.
Really?
And suckling pig or suckling lamb. I felt bad about that one afterwards, but it still tasted very good.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't know what it was while I was eating it. Not that I'm a vegetarian, but that's like even that's a little much for me.
Somebody was telling me, was it in France? Somewhere that they went. And I was in Spain, and you walk into this restaurant and you pick the baby pig that you want to eat.
Gosh.
And they prep it for you. And he told me, he's like, that was kind of hard. That was different. But yeah, the French are known obviously for their food. And you know, I think about France and you think about Italy as being like two of those, like just meccas of food and cuisine. And in one thing you realize is that like when you eat food and really good food in those places, you don't feel terrible. Like in the U.S. when you go eat like pasta or something like that, you just feel terrible when you're done. But
I found out why.
Why is that?
It's how we did a tour for like a bread shop.
Okay.
And they explained how there are specific ingredients that we put in our flour that are banned there.
Okay.
And then they also keep, it's not like every single bread is sourdough, but every bread that they make has like an essence of sourdough because they're it's living still, essentially. So it's mostly the ingredients, but also we spray a pesticide, or not a pesticide, we spray something on, it's not folic acid, or is it folate maybe? There's something that we spray on all of our wheat.
Yeah.
That most people are allergic to,
yeah.
Which maybe it's poison. I don't know. Maybe that's something we should think about.
A lot of it is sprayed with glyphosate, which is Roundup, and and they've produced a type of wheat called Roundup Ready wheat, meaning that you can spray the wheat and it won't kill the wheat, but it'll kill the weeds. That can't be good.
No.
So yeah, you're ingesting that stuff at some point for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's cool, because I'm a brewer. I brew beer, and countries have purity laws with their beer, and you are only allowed to use certain things to keep things like traditional. And probably the same thing goes into their food production, where you're not allowed to add or do certain things to their products, which makes sense that when you're eating those foods, you just feel like you're more healthier or something. I don't know what it is, but
it's probably, a higher percentage of actual food
less fructose,
overprocessed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely not the fructose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was great though. The food was fantastic.
How long were you there?
About a week.
Okay. How long ago?
That was nice. Long. This was, we left on December 27th. So I was there for New Year's.
Was that cool?
Really neat. We skipped we stayed away from the tour group because they just did all of the things I didn't want to do, like Moulin Rouge and, So we skipped it and just walked and got lost. And then we ended up at the top of a hill, and we realized like all these people were following us up this hill. And we get to the very top. And not 5 minutes later, people start like counting down. They open up bottles of champagne, and we turn around, and there's a huge fireworks display right over the Eiffel Tower.
Wow.
So we just like accidentally ended up at this local tradition. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you go see the Eiffel Tower?
No. I skipped that too.
I've
seen it. Like, not in person, but I've seen it from afar. I feel like that's when it's at its best. Most of what I did is I walked around and went to cafes. I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say I went to between 20 and 30 cafes. That's what I did the entire time.
Good coffees and pastries?
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah.
Did you go to the Louvre?
I did not go to the Louvre. No, I tried. We had tickets to 3 museums, but each time we got there, the lines were crazy long.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I really came here just to like walk around anyway. Yeah. So we'll watch a YouTube video on this.
I appreciate that, because what you've done is you really absorb culture
as much, and
by avoiding the touristy stuff, you really just lived and absorbed the culture. When I was in Italy in like 2000, I was there for 2 weeks, and it was awesome. I was in a school program, but we had plenty of time to go and do our own things in the afternoons, and I would just go. And it was a good sized town, Pistoia. And I would just go and walk around and get lost, and just, had my headphones on and my cassettes.
Yeah.
Because this was again 2000. And it was just walking around and just getting lost in it. And like, I found like all this cool stuff. I found I found a comic shop for one, which was amazing, because I wouldn't even known how to look it up. But then I just saw it. And I guess that's just my nerd radar drew me there. And I found like this like a little like fair kind of a thing. I don't know if it was kind of like a business fair or something. I don't know. I just wandered into it and just like people had all these displays and stuff, and it was all in Italian. I had no clue what was going on, but I just walked around and just kind of, it was just cool, you know, because it was like, I did go see, you know, some of the museums and such, but I really took the time to get to wander around and just, you know, observe and just kind of blend in as much as I could and just, you know, enjoy it for what it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's good traveling. So.
For sure.
I would love to go back and see the museums and stuff maybe on another trip because they are gorgeous. And I did have a little bit of FOMO when I did watch the videos. But, you know, I saw the outside of Versailles and that's kind of cool enough for now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and also
I would love to go back for sure.
It gives you the excuse to go back. So
There you go.
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely.
Get this. We call it What's Your Weird Story, right? But we don't limit it to weird stories. It's true. Sometimes we have crazy travel and epic adventure stories. Sometimes we do book reports and other special episodes. Sometimes we'll cover some weird news. Sometimes I'll see one of my oldest, dearest friends just dancing around and punching the air for 5 minutes before we sit down and record an episode. But hey, it's all good because it's fun to talk to people, to make new friends, to get in touch and reacquainted with old friends and hear amazing stories. Tilly, you did some traveling. What happened?
Oh, yeah.
You also had an interesting, you've had some interesting experiences.
Yeah, so I spent on New Year's, I booked like a birthday trip to Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
Nice.
And some buddies and I stayed the night at the Crescent Hotel. It's supposed to be like one of the most haunted hotels.
Wow, how was that?
I didn't experience really anything. There was a moment where I thought I kept seeing something, but it didn't look like a human. And it was right at the beginning of the tour. We were walking around the building, just kind of like looking at the aesthetic, talking about when it was built, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, what is this weird small shadow thing darting up and down the stairs? This is super weird. And at the very end of the tour, the lady goes, look for Morris. He's our ghost cat.
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh, no way. That has to be him.
That's cool.
Yeah. And they do have another cat, which I don't remember what his name is. He is like very fluffy and black, but he pretty much just sleeps on like a chair in front of the fireplace all the time. So I don't think it was him. And I think it was Morris, their cat that had passed away a few years before. So that was pretty cool. And they have a heated pool. It was like freezing, snowing outside. And then the pool was heated to 90 degrees. So I recommend the pool.
Nice.
And it's outside. So it's like you go out, you can't see anything. All you can see is where the pool is and then all of the fog rising off of the pool. And then like all the beautiful stars above you because the hotel is on this really tall hill. So all you can see is stars above you.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
How many rooms are in that hotel? Is it pretty small or pretty big?
Probably less than 100.
Okay.
Probably about 100.
Wow.
And it's an old hotel?
Yeah. It was built in 1886.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's old.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of events. And there's another hotel. I can't remember. I think it's called the Basin Hotel. It's at the bottom of the hill, and it's also supposedly haunted.
Cool. Nice.
Mm-hmm. And the whole town is like, I wouldn't say really creepy or eerie. It's more, I don't know. I didn't look up anything before I went there. You walk around, you're finding these really old wells that water are still like spitting out the wall or up from the ground. Mm-hmm. And those did give some vibes. And then, so this, it was New Year's Eve. We wanted to go to a bar and drink. So we're walking around the town. Everywhere's like, we have one bartender. Our other bartenders didn't show up. It's going to be an hour before I can make you a drink. We just kept walking around. We come upon what looks like this shack in the side of a wall, like a limestone wall. And it's like, when I say shack, it's like a tin roof, but walls and then a tarp, and you can see where they put a propane tank heater, like the umbrella looking ones. Inside of this, and it melted the tarp. Yeah,
you're in Arkansas.
So I'm like screw it, let's go in. We go in, we get margaritas right away. There's a band playing. It's like a mixture of what looks like 90s alternative mixed with like hippies, and this young kid with long hair and like a cowboy hat, and he's probably younger than me. He's in white skinny jeans and he's like wearing beads. No one's like wearing shirts or anything. And there's these two people that look like they're vampires sitting in front of us, because it's just these long dining room tables that everyone's sitting at. Plus, there is a chandelier hanging from what looks like a cardboard ceiling, and there's water dripping in off of the chandelier. I'm just like, my friends.
This place sounds awesome.
Yeah, my friends that came with me are like, should we feel unsafe? I'm like, just drink your margarita. It's okay. Just listen to the music. And it's like a cover band. So it's like, it's all music that we've heard before.
Yeah.
And we're just going with it. But these two people sitting in front of us, this one girl looks like she's like went to a vampire festival and she's like probably posting pictures on her Instagram. But the guy that's with her, he doesn't have a phone. They're starting to pass out like the little New Year's whistle blower things and like the plastic frilly lays. And he's looking at it. He's questioning it. It's like on his neck and he's acting like he's disgusted. And then he pulls out a coin pouch to pay for his girl's drink, and he's handing coins to the bartender. I'm like, is he from a different universe? I'm just sitting there like, she's clearly from here. She's got fake contacts and fake teeth glued to her teeth, but he's like legit. He doesn't have the fake teeth, but he's in like leather. He looks like a Skyrim character. I'm like, what is happening? This guy is not from anywhere near here or from this time period. And then, like, at New Year, she kisses him, and he's just like, okay, can we leave now? And they leave. And I'm like, I kind of want to follow them, but I'm really drunk. And then I try to walk back to the hotel, get completely lost. And this guy that I was just friends with at the time, he decided to drive 5 hours down to hang out with me at this bar. So he ends up walking back with me. We get lost trying to find the hotel. And then he actually asked me out on the way to the hotel. And aww. I said, yeah. So aww, now I have nice. A boyfriend.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
And that's like a whole weird story, because I told you guys last year how I was like trying to use like tarot cards and crystals and like moon energy to like manifest friends and a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, in the process of doing that, I was just completely awkward. Like the guy that I really liked last year, I couldn't even form a sentence anytime I hung out with him. So eventually he was like, we're not hanging out anymore. And I'm like, I get it. I'm being so weird around you. It's fine. I wouldn't hang out with me either. And then this guy at work starts harassing me. And the guy I'm dating is also works at Amazon with all of us. So this guy who's harassing me, he's someone who I was hanging out with just as like, I wouldn't even say like a rebound. He was just this guy I hung out and like went out and ate at like a sandwich shop a couple of times with, just to get over thinking about the guy that I actually wanted to be with.
Yeah.
And because I wouldn't like sleep with this guy, he started calling the HR hotline reporting like I'm racist and yeah, all this crazy stuff that I spread rumors about him. So like the guy I'm dating, he's seen me crying at work one day and he's like, I don't know what's happening, but can I walk you to your car? And that's how we started talking.
Wow.
So it's like all of everything, like I believe everything like happens for a reason and everything's connected.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Eureka Springs is known as a really cool, weird, like slice of life in.
Yeah, it was such a cool, like their main street, like zigzags through this like limestone hill bluff, whatever. It's such a cool place.
Yeah. It's one of my wife's favorite towns to visit.
Yeah, I want to go back like anytime I can. It's just amazing. There was a art store that sells like sculptures, and in the very back room, in like this skinny little hallway next to like a small bathroom door that no one wants to use, there was these robot sculptures. And I'm like, these are so cool. I tell the lady, I said, you need to put these up front. These would sell immediately. And she goes, actually, the owner of the shop got those in like an auction. He thought that they would sell and he hates them. They've been sitting here for years. He put them in this corner because he hates them so much. And he's actually selling them 50% off right now. And I'm like, okay, I'm broke. I just spent like $300 on alcohol this weekend, but I will be back for these robot sculptures.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I'll have to send you guys pictures.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. So, also, I know that you've had this that trip, that adventure, but I know there's another adventure that definitely is more in line with the themes that we have here for the pod, doing
a lot of festivals, traveling, hiking new places. And I've been dragging my boyfriend everywhere with me. He's like he likes to identify as a hobbit, and now it's like he has no idea what he's got himself into.
The adventure begins.
Yeah, one of the crazy things, one of the many crazy things I've dragged him to this year was the St. Louis Pagan Picnic.
Oh, yeah.
So what I was expecting was like a lot of vendors, because I've been to like little witch festivals between like Missouri, Illinois, and most of them are just vendors where people sell like little witchy craft things. Like some people have like moths in a beautiful frame with some flowers, whatever, or they sell tarot cards, or maybe they bedazzled a skeleton of some sort. Well, that's basically what I was expecting. One of my friends who's 10 years older than me, he said he went in like the early 2000s and it was more like a hippie goth retreat where everyone had their nipples pierced. No one wore shirts. Everyone like was on acid and just listening to music and dancing and whatever. So I didn't really know what to expect. But I was partially correct. It was a lot of vendors selling a bunch of stuff. There were also like horror themed vendors selling like Chucky stickers, stuff like that.
Yeah.
ghost face backpacks. So I'm like, okay, there was also an emo tent. It was like shirts that said, "It's not a phase, mom," stuff like that.
That's great.
There were also these, like little discussion tents that you could go to. They were supposed to be called like workshops where, I guess if you are someone who wants to have like your own, like little mini discussion group, you sign up, you get your own tent. So these workshops were called Building Our Sacred Haven. So I read a sign that said this and I thought, that sounds cool. That sounds like, I don't know, maybe they'll teach us how to grow and use our own herbs for spirituality, like maybe a protection herb, something of that sort. Like, how do you make your own smudge sticks?
Right.
I thought it would be that.
So I get there,
I sit down. And I'm a couple minutes in before I realize this is basically a Satanist TED Talk.
Oh, that's and amazing.
I look over at my boyfriend and I'm like, what is this? And he's like, dude, don't ask me. He's like, what do you want to do? I was like, we're not getting up and leaving. I was like, for one, I don't want to piss off a Satanist. Right. For two, I'm kind of interested now. I have to see where this goes.
I need to
know more.
Oh, yeah, I love it. That's the choice I think I would have made.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you've got to.
You know what I mean? Let's see it through. Yeah. Let's see where we're going here.
Yeah. So it was like an hour and a half to 2 hour workshop on different Satanist practices. This guy, so his name is Martin McGregor.
Okay.
And up to this point, like, the only thing about Satanists that I know is that they call on different forms of Satan. And I've heard of the name Aleister Crowley. That's about as much as I know about Satanism.
Okay. Okay.
So Martin McGregor, his actual workshop name was called Zoetta, The Path of Living Magic. I've never heard of Zoetta before, and I've never even heard of different terms that Satanists use for their practice of magic, but his is called Zoetta. And basically what he described over an hour and a half is Zoetta was a type of Goetta, I think is how you pronounce it, which is just sorcery, I believe.
Okay.
And that they use grimoires, which are books of spells, spell books. He had like this little setup. He had like little wooden shapes. One was like a big wooden circle. He had a wooden triangle. He described that it's called the magic circle and triangle. He had a wand. He stood in the circle and he was explaining how you stand in the circle and it kind of protects you, where you cast your spirit or a spirit, and the spirit can be an angel or a demon. You cast it into the triangle, and when you're interacting with this entity, you are basically using them to power you, which actually in turns helps you empower yourself in the future. And then I guess you have to have an intention in mind. Martin, he said his intention was basically to write a book. He has a couple of books, but specifically he used this a specific ritual that he talked about in his book to help him write his book, which I guess is kind of cool. So I did a quick like Google of what is this magic circle and triangle thing. It came up with a couple of things, but the one thing that caught my eye the most was Super Mario Bros. Game uses the magic circle in its opening screen. And now forever, I will believe that Mario and Luigi are a sorcerer and his, like, assistant. That's all I'm going to think about when I see them now.
Wow. That sounds right out of the Satanic Panic of the 80s, where, you know, you're like, oh, Mario's a wizard, and Luigi, that's his. That's
I think
princess.
So now. I mean, look at the trouble they get in all the time. Right.
Was this guy well spoken? Was he interesting to listen to, or what was the vibe?
Yeah, he actually was. It was so interesting. I started stalking him on his Facebook. He has like three websites. He has a YouTube channel, and him and his assistant and this other woman actually opened up like their own, I don't want to call it a church, and I don't even remember what its name is now, but it's something, the Abbey something, and they apparently go to like Utah and a couple other states where they do these rituals, and they just made it to where you can now sign up to join them.
Okay, gotcha.
So there might be a story in the future.
Yeah did you sign up?
Not yet.
Okay. Does it
we'll
cost
see what
anything?
Happens.
Is there a fee?
I didn't see. I'm sure there has to be a cost. I'm not sure. I'm waiting to see if more YouTube videos are posted. The one video I looked at, it was someone flying a drone, because the the angle that you're watching their performance is from like a treetop. So it had to be someone flying a drone, but they're in like these hooded capes and they have these large sticks with fire and they make the circle and the triangle and fire on the ground. And they're in like the desert and they're just like going around doing these different things, drinking from cups. He told a really cool story about how, I guess, one of his rituals went. I think, so, okay, I'll just tell what I remember. So he and his assistant went to a park. They were at an Airbnb for, I guess, a Satanist convention. I don't remember what state this is in. But they've seen a park across the street from their Airbnb, and they go there, and I don't remember exactly what he said they did there. I want to say they did some kind of like meditation and there was a fire involved and he was like zoning into the fire. And then all of a sudden he is in the shower with his assistant and was really confused. And he comes back and I think there was like a few hours lost there and his assistant was like really confused. There was like some confusion. I can't remember if he couldn't see him, like he really did leave. But when he like came back, he was there by himself. There was like something weird, like some weird disconnection. And he tells his assistant the story. I think he like went back into the past. He said he like how he found out he had gone through some weird time portal. He told his assistant the story. And his assistant was like, oh my gosh, it makes sense now. You're wearing the same outfit as you were like a couple of months ago when I seen you in the shower with me. You were wearing that same outfit and you were there and then you weren't. So he like went through a time portal to the past. And basically what this did was it told them that they could, I guess, essentially make the next steps to their another more in-depth ritual. There was like a lot I feel like he wasn't telling us. Like I feel like he's using these portals as a way of becoming one with like Lucifer or something, because he's telling these stories explaining how he invites Satan into the triangle. Actually, let me read his description. I looked up his workshop on the Pagan Picnic website. So this might help it make a little bit more sense. So the description he wrote himself says, for decades, modern left-hand path magicians have been forced to adapt tools, methods, and traditions that are inherently at odds with the devoted reverence and veneration of spirits in everyday life. Zoetta is not an adaptation, but rather an inversion, a blasphemy upon the very premise of goetic ritual. This is a sorcerous art that harnesses the presence and power of spirits and then integrates it into your life. Spirits are not kept at bay, but instead ingested, internalized, so that they may work their alchemical changes from within for the enhancement of your life. Seek not to conjure spirits before you. Desire their heat on your neck and their knees on your back, pushing you forward into the unknown. You will find no protection circles or banishing rituals here. So,
interesting.
Very interesting. It sounds like he's in that, maybe in that type of school of like of Aleister Crowley, or someone kind of like that, of a magic practitioner.
Yeah, because it's like, all I remember is you summon the spirit in the triangle. It can be a demon or an angel, but he kept talking about Satan specifically. He kept referencing Beelzebub.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever it is that you conjure into the triangle, it is free to move without disturbing your safety or peace. I do remember he said that he uses it for two things. He either conjures it to help work and cooperate with him, or he conjures it and then dominates it. And I think like for power. And but all I can remember him talking about really is how he used it to write his book, and that all of his practices he has in his book. And this was like a really thick book. The book's name is called The Book of Fallen. And like I said, he has two books. They're categorized as theistic Satanism nonfiction books. But, okay, so let me go back to Zoetta. So, like he said before, it's like a, I'm going to say a spinoff of Goetta, but it's something that he produced, I guess, himself. So he changed the name of it so that I guess it follows more of his criteria. Yeah. So I tried to Google Zoetta. I couldn't find anything. The only thing I could find was his website. Let's see. His website is called, oh gosh, I don't think I wrote it down, but he's on Facebook. You can find all of his websites under his name, which is Martin McGregor. But when I did look up, his YouTube is Real Satanism. And there you'll find a lot of videos of him and his assistant. And then his website is called SinisterSide.com. So he has the two books, which is Path to Satan. And The Path of Satan is actually a book that the outsiders are supposed to read. So if you're like a Satanist and you find it difficult to talk to your family about who you are, what you identify with, and what you're working with, you are just supposed to give this book to your family to read, which will help them understand.
Okay.
When you said it's for the the outsiders read it, I'm thinking of the classic teen movie. Like, I'm like, I haven't read the book, and it's been a while since I've seen the movie, but I don't remember Ponyboy breaking out a satanic guidebook.
Soda pop.
Yeah.
Oh man, well, that's
really. That's wild.
Satanism is so interesting in that there's no, I think there is maybe some more formal schools of it, but it seems to me like there's a very, it's very broad.
Yeah.
Practicing is like kind of your own spin, and whatever you're trying to achieve, you know, is, it's kind of up to the practitioner to figure out, you know?
Yeah. So I think it was on Amazon. I seen his book, so I clicked on the description, and basically his second book, Book of Fallen, the one that he was reading from and attempting to talk about that I was listening to, that book is, it seeks to close the gap between theistic and atheistic practices. So what he meant by bringing in theistic practices is he tries to use the inspirations and the direction that theistics follow, combining it with like modern era satanic practices.
Interesting.
And then so I guess, yeah, that's where his term Zoetta comes from, is I guess it's just his own personal practices.
Wow.
That's wild.
It seemed interesting.
And you made it out safely. How did the boyfriend react after the indoctrination?
He was like, you bring me to the weirdest shit. The first thing I dragged him to, and this was, I was going to go by myself. This was back in December, before we had even started dating, like a week or two before we started dating. He's like, what are you doing today? And I'm like, I'm about to head to Kansas City to watch Robert Kennedy Jr. talk. And he's like, do you need someone to go with you? And I was like, who would volunteer to do that? No one cares about this. And he's like, well, I'll go with you. And I'm like, okay, you did it yourself. We get there. And he's like, what did I sign up for? There's a big group of people that's like, would you like to learn how to be a petition circulator. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like fun. He's like, I thought we were just coming here to listen to a speech and leave. I'm like, well, you're here. So we took this like 2-hour class on how to become petition circulators. So then all the way up until like 2 weeks ago, we had been going out pretty often to collect signatures to get Kennedy Jr. on the Missouri ballot.
Good for you.
Wow,
it was wild.
This guy, he stuck around. I mean, he drove down. I mean, he obviously liked you, and he sounds like he's a keeper. He's gonna go with you to
it's the power of the crystals, and now that I don't do that anymore, it's gonna wear off.
Oh, if he stuck through RFK and Satanism, he's a keeper.
My dad is this like 60 something year old man who's like, he used to hike Mount Shasta like once every 2 years, and this dude could do it so fast with like very little food. And he asked me about a year ago, will you hike this mountain with me? And I'm like, snow? I can't do snow. I like snow, but there's no way I could hike up 14,000 plus feet in it. I will die. Like, I won't die because of like an avalanche. It'll be cold and I'll just lay down and sacrifice myself. Like, just take me.
Cut you open and hide inside for the warmth.
Exactly. But I was like, whatever, Dad, I'll do it. Like, I gotta be cool. Like, gotta do this one last thing for my dad. Like, it was a couple years ago. He's like, you like coffee and you wear wool socks. You've taken in the greatest two things that I could have taught you. I'm just like, okay, weirdo, are you gonna die soon? Like, why are you talking like this? So I was like, you know what, screw it. As long as I have wool socks and coffee, I'll hike this stupid mountain with you. And I dragged my boyfriend along for that too.
Oh, wow. How did that go?
We got up. Okay, so in my brain, I'm like, 14,000 feet. I trained for it. And by train, I mean I just forced myself to come home every day after work for a couple of months and box and to prepare for high altitude. I went running in 100 degree muggy weather here in Missouri.
Yeah.
That was like my logic was, okay, I can't breathe high up. When can I not breathe in Missouri? When it's 100 degrees after a really good soggy rain. Yeah. So that's what I did. Torture. And I'm not even kidding you. The hike was basically a breeze, but my dad had me freaked out of the snow. So I brought like warm clothing. He also told me don't bring too much warm clothing because the light reflecting off the snow will make you hot. So I brought a pair of shorts, a pair of yoga pants, and then like windbreaker, water resistant pants. He told me bring your snowboarding boots and then a pair of shoes that you want to wear for after the hike. So I brought my running shoes and my snowboarding boots. Well, we get to the mountain and they're telling us don't hike Avalanche Gulch. There's no more snow. It's just a bunch of boulders flying down and you don't want to risk getting hit by a boulder. So my dad says, okay, well, let's go to the other side of the mountain where there is still snow and we'll hike that side. So we get there. There's barely any snow on that side either, but there isn't any boulders because it's all what's called, I guess, scree, which is like little pebbles and volcanic ash.
Wow.
But with that, I can't wear my snowboarding boots. So I was forced to wear my running shoes the whole time. Gosh. That was awful.
Oh, man.
Once we got up past the tree line at about 9,000 feet, it was just my feet constantly sliding in the scree. Mm. And we're still dealing with like black toenails about to fall off. And most of my blisters on my feet no longer have pus and have fully dried up at this point.
Wow.
And we went hiking on July 2nd. So it's feet are just now almost healed. Give it like another week or two. Yeah.
Wow.
And I was a little freaked out of hiking above the tree line because I looked up all this Native American folklore that said don't hike above the tree line because anything, if you go anywhere after the tree line, you're sacrificing yourself to the gods, that the mountain is a sacred place. It's basically the connecting point on the earth for the living world and the God world. Mm. Like, they believed that the mountain was so tall that that's how the gods got back to their world, as they took the mountain as like a staircase into their realm.
Wow.
So once we got past the tree line on day two, I just looked back and was like, well, here goes nothing. I hope I don't get sacrificed.
How many days does it take?
If you're really good at hiking, it can take you 15 hours. I met a guy who, his name was Andrew. He lives in Colorado. He said he's a pretty well-experienced hiker. He passed us when we were almost to 13,000 feet, and then he passed us. He was sprinting down. We ended up turning around early because we ran out of food. My dad underestimated how much I could eat.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to take in a lot of calories.
I think I ate the most. For breakfast, we had ramen noodles and instant coffee. And the big bowls of ramen, not the tiny little squares.
Yeah.
We had the big bowls. Oh, and it was wild. We had to actually melt snow and boil it to get water. And we had these bottles where we would pack it tight full of snow and then just hook it onto the outside of our backpack so that the sun would melt it. And I'm not even kidding you. It was 100 degrees the entire time.
Wow.
We were hiking. When the sun would set, it would drop down so fast to 28. It was so crazy.
Wow.
Did you camp on the mountain?
We did twice. We camped at 8,500 feet and 1,100 feet.
Damn.
So at about 13,100, we're sitting there eating our last snack. We're realizing we have no food. We just packed our bottles full of snow. It takes about 2 hours for the snow to melt before you can drink it. And I look at my dad and I'm like, we still have another 4 hours to hike up. He wasn't planning on camping. So then it would have been a 10-hour hike down. So he's like, we should just turn around now. And I'm so glad we did. We got to the car. I could barely move my legs or feet. And then we are stopping at all these little diners because this is Northern California. They don't have civilization hardly at all.
Right.
And we are stopping at these diners and they're packed. And everyone's it'll be a 2-hour wait before we can get to you. So we finally, 3 or 4 hours down the road, we find an In-N-Out burger. We decide to place an order. It's still a 45-minute wait. We're chugging coffee while we're waiting for our burgers and fries. And it was the best burger and fries that I've ever had.
I can imagine. Damn, that's quite a... That altitude, I've been up that high in Colorado, I don't know what 12,000 feet or something like that. I got that pounding headache thing.
That's
happening.
What I was afraid of. And I didn't get that at all.
Oh, dude, it was terrible.
You know what they tell you to take to fight that now?
What?
To fight altitude sickness. They say Viagra.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
Wow.
Yes way. Seriously.
Gets the blood pumping.
It's whatever it is in Viagra, it helps you acclimate to altitude.
That is amazing, dude.
So,
only issue is you can't walk.
Well, you can walk, you just can't stumble. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if but for whatever reason, it helps fight the altitude.
That's weird.
Wow. That's
isn't it strange?
Fascinating.
Is that only for men, or can women take it too for headaches in a mountain?
What would happen with that? I don't know. I don't know what it does to lady parts, but,
you might grow something.
Yeah.
Wow. You're a tough cookie, man, to do that.
Yeah. It was wild. We got down back to 8,500, and we found a creek or a spring or something, and I was just drinking water. I'm like, I don't care about parasites at this point. I'm so thirsty.
Yeah. Would you ever do it again, knowing what you know?
Oh, yeah. I told my dad we have to do it again next year because I don't quit a hike. I will go back and finish it.
Good for you.
So this guy that we met on the hike, Andrew, he asked us where we're from. We told him we're like from the St. Charles, St. Louis area. And what's wild is he grew up here and now he's in Colorado Springs, like. Wow. I think he said Colorado Springs or Boulder area. And he's like, anytime I go visit my mom and grandma in St. Louis, I go to the St. Charles rock climbing gym that they have there. You got to check it out. That's how I started getting better at mountain climbing. So here soon, I'm going to start doing that. I told my boyfriend, we got to start doing that at least once or twice a month on top of, like, I'll be boxing and running and still do, like, my yoga stretches on top of all that and eating healthy. Also, Mark and I are going to take swing dance lessons in October.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I'm sure that'll somehow help with that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. How did he do with the mountain?
He did pretty well. I was shocked. But he's like very headstrong and he was in the Marines. So I think that's part of that.
That helps.
Yeah. But he is like, he's very accident prone. Anytime I take him on like a regular Missouri hike, he falls all the time, once or twice. He's 6'6". So I think he just doesn't know how to balance. Like it's not his fault. It's his height's fault.
Yeah.
I'm not 6'6". I'm like six. When you're a boy going and you get the height in puberty, you go through that awkward phase with your body because your body is growing and you're still not spatially aware with it enough. And usually that passes for people because they become spatially aware with their own bodies. But I never got past that awkward part, so I'm still very clumsy, and I'm sure that it sounds like he's the same way, because I mean I was never good at sports or anything, so I'm sure I would be falling a lot. I mean, I hurt myself stepping down steps off of curbs. You know, I mean, so you know, twist my ankle doing something like that, falling, and hiking sounds great. But I just know that, you know, that is just going to be a series of ever-increasing accidents for me.
Yeah, no joke, man. Wow.
Yeah, so my dad wants to hike the mountain in the snow. So this winter, I'm hoping for a rough winter here in Missouri because I'm going to go out every day and just absorb it and get myself mentally prepared. I'm going to go out in shorts, maybe flip-flops, who knows, but there I'm going to try to become mentally like headstrong and okay with the cold.
That's just awesome.
You do a lot of walks in the snow, you know.
Yeah. I used to love the snow as a kid. I used to go out in my pajama pants. My friends and I would walk 4 miles across town to meet each other. We had these plastic snowboards that we'd take down the hills. I mean, we would be soaked and frozen and it didn't even matter. But now I'm a baby when it comes to the cold. I have nothing to do with it.
I love it, but yeah, I think the older you get, the more you hate the cold.
Mm-hmm. I can stand the heat, though. Oh, another place I forced my boyfriend to go hiking was we went to Death Valley to see the lake that formed.
Oh,
I had to see that. That's like a possible once in a lifetime thing. There used to be an ancient lake like 400,000 years ago, and it's there again.
Oh,
and
wow.
it's in the salt flat, and it's in like the Death Valley has the lowest sea level that doesn't have water in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so I had to go see it. We walked through the water and then I forced him to hike the sand dunes with me.
Oh my God.
And there was a sandstorm. So that was fun. Oh,
I stayed in a little town right on the edge of Death Valley. My wife and I did. This is probably 5 or 6 years ago. And it was one of the coolest things that we've ever done. And we weren't expecting anything. We actually drove there because we couldn't get a hotel room in Las Vegas. We had a hotel room booked for the next day. And somebody had suggested, you guys should go to, I think it's called Shoshone, California, right?
Okay.
Right across the border. And it's right on the edge of Death Valley. And it was very hot. But I remember we went to this little, there was a little, the hotel we stayed at was so cute. Somebody had taken one of those really old, like, motels from back in the, you know, 40s or whatever. And they redid it. Really cute. Woke up the next morning. There's one place to eat breakfast. We eat breakfast. And then we go to this museum that's right next door. And they had a mammoth display of mammoth bones that they had dug up out of one of the old lake beds or whatever. And this thing was like, it was one piece of rock. And it was like, I'd say probably 30 feet long by like 15 or 20 feet wide. And they were like 10 mammoths that were,
wow,
that had died, and they were fossilized. And it was fucking so cool. And I'm like, this just little museum in the middle of nowhere. That was, man, it was so cool, man. It was just like the unexpected, you know?
Yeah, so. That's what I love about, like, the areas that connect California and Nevada. There's a lot of those weird little towns that you can just find stuff like that. I love it. I one of my next trips, I'm just going to fly into California and drive back to Missouri. I did that, I think it was 2 years ago, and I took the northern route.
Yeah.
And it was wild. I seen beautiful, so many cool things. Yeah.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, California is so interesting because there's so many different climates and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get, you know, Southern California, of course, is beautiful, the weather and stuff. And then you when I was a little kid, my parents took us out there and we drove up the, was it the 101 that right up the, from LA up to San Francisco. And we stopped at the cool little, like, Carmen, California, which is where Clint Eastwood was the mayor for a little while. It's this really cute little, like, boating town. And then we went up to see the Hearst Castle, which is where, you know, the dude that owned William Randolph Hearst, he owned a huge newspaper company. And he built this castle. And back then, you could just, like, you could import statues from Greece, Egypt, whatever. If you had enough money to get the stuff over there, there were no laws about it. So he had, like, his pool outside was, like, surrounded by Greek statues. And he built a pool, and it has all of the celestial... what's the word I'm looking for? The zodiac, and it's the stars are 24 karat gold.
Damn.
And they say and it's inside, but the top of it is glass. And they say that at night when the moon shines on it, it just, like, sparkles, and it's really, really pretty. But
that would be so cool.
Yeah, Hearst. He had all the money.
All the money
back in the day. He's the guy that. They based Citizen Kane off of, you know. So, you know, he's
responsible for making marijuana illegal.
Yep.
Because hemp was his. He also owned a lot of wood, paper factories, and hemp was the big
it was a cheaper competition. Alternative.
Yeah. So, interesting stuff, man. Yeah, California is beautiful. There's beautiful parts for sure.
That's cool.
Well, Adam, so tell us your story, man.
I can't believe I keep forgetting. Out of all the stories that we share, you know, here on the podcast, this is one I keep forgetting. And I guess because at the time, it didn't seem like a lot. But then, you know, when you reflect back, you're like, oh, that was kind of a historical event, you know?
Yeah.
So, flashback to 11 years ago, September 2013. I decided to go on a road trip, and I was going to go check out some schools for when I was thinking about going to grad school, so I was going to go check out some schools, and I drove up from North Carolina to Washington D.C. and I stayed with a friend of mine and her daughter, and my friend is she's military, she was Air Force, and so she lived on the base. There's a big Air Force military base, not just Air Force, but all sorts of military, the military families, and you know they're like little towns. This is in the it's in the DC area. It's in part of DC. So the next day, went to school. She went to work, and I just kind of woke up and decided to kind of. I mean, I had no plans. I had like very. It was very freewheeling. You know, I didn't have anywhere to go. Just kind of had some general ideas where I was going to be. You know, just driving. You know, kind of taking it cool.
Yeah.
I decided, well, I'm going to go walk to there's Starbucks on the base. So I'm going to go walk down to that Starbucks and, grab a coffee and, and then I'll, kind of pack up and then leave, wait till after 9 so that I can, beat the rush hour traffic, because I mean traffic in DC is just terrible. Insane. Anyway.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll beat the rush hour traffic if I wait just a little bit past 9, so leave about 9:30 or whatever. That was the idea, but it was still very early. So I was, I was attempting to find the Starbucks, and I never found it because I got lost on the base, but I found my way back. And as I was coming back to the her house, one of the neighbors. I heard some announcements over like the big air horn.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what they were saying. Didn't understand what they're saying. So I figured, well, I'm not military, so it's not going to pretend. I'm just a guest. So then I'm making my way back to her house, and the neighbor says was outside. She's like, you need to go inside. We're under lockdown. There's a shooter on the base. There could be two. They're looking for more. And that's when I realized that nobody was out on the streets except for a couple of cop cars. And there was a few helicopters flying over. And again, this is like, I'm not. This is all new to me, so yeah. I don't know that it's unusual.
Yeah.
I don't know that this is not the normal everyday thing on base. You know, I figure, well, nobody's out because this is like a small town. Everybody's at work, of course, there's cops driving around. That's what you do, And so I'm like, well, what's going on? And they're like, there's some kind of a shoot. They think there's a shooter on the base. And they told everybody to go into lockdown, and because they're looking for them to, a shooter or two. There could be two.
Shit.
And so
did the neighbor know you? Had you talked to this person?
No, not at all.
They didn't think about you being the shooter?
I guess because I was just kind of walking around doo-doo-doo, and I didn't have a gun in my hand or, anything. Maybe I did meet them. I would hope so.
If I just put my gun in my pocket, no one will think I'm the shooter.
If I hadn't met them, then my friend told them. Maybe I did meet them. I must have. I must have. Anyway, so I went inside, and I turned on the news, and I, CNN, of course, and come to find out that this was the day of the Washington Navy Yard shooting.
Wow.
So this guy named Aaron Alexis got onto the base and fatally shot 12 people and injured 3 others on the Navy base in the Navy Yard. which was connected to, but still very far from where I was.
Yeah.
But they didn't know like anything about how many people there were on the base, how many people they were shooting. You know, they didn't know what was going on. So they were like, lock this place down. You know, everybody,
holy,
you know,
shit.
Yeah. And so I was stuck on base in my friend's house for hours.
Damn.
You know, and then finally, somewhere in the middle of the afternoon, I got out, and you know, but like it was very weird. It was very bizarre, man. Because, you know, I'm watching live on TV what's going on, and I'm like, I'm right here, right next to where this is going on. And, you know, like, I don't know. I'm just stuck here.
Holy shit.
I'm just stuck here watching TV, you know? And I took a nap, and, you know?
Wow. I never knew that. You never said you never told that. That's amazing, man. Holy That's shit.
Wild. It's just crazy coincidence that I was there on that day.
No kidding, man. Holy shit, dude. Yeah. Yeah, and you don't know the lay of the land. You don't know really what's what and who's how far it is to whatever's happening, man.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Not at all. Not at all. But, you know, it's just all and how oblivious I was as well, you know, because like.
I'm sure.
Oblivious to ghosts, oblivious to mass shooters.
Yeah. That's me.
I'm sure you're happy to get out of there.
Stumbling through. Oh, we're very happy to get out and get on the road. Except, of course, when I do, I get right into the thick. Of traffic.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I was in traffic for like 4 hours. It sucked.
Oh, that sucks.
It sucked.
Oh, insult to injury.
I'm so lucky I didn't wet myself while I was stuck in traffic. Because, I mean, I can't do that. I can't go 4 hours now without taking a pee. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's great. Wow. Amazing, man. This has been a great session, man. I can't believe we're celebrating 6 years, man.
Dude, yeah, six done. Now we're getting moving into 7.
Amazing.
Wow, that's cool.
Amazing. It's wild. It's, you know, and it's just Bobby had to leave early, you know, because I think the French government beeped in. But, you know, I don't know. I saw just a bunch of, like, dudes dressed all in black with little thin handlebar mustaches and berets and little sashes, you know, broken. She muted it just in time, but I'm pretty sure that was the French foreign, or not the Foreign Legion, but the French berets. They don't have a color. It's not red berets or green berets. It's just the berets.
Yeah.
But,
coming over to take their pee samples.
That's right. There you go. Pissing to the jar. We must match. That's so funny.
That's great.
That's so funny, dude.
But yeah, awesome. Cool, man. Well, thank you everybody for listening and hanging in there with us for 6 years. And here we go on to the 7th. Yes.
Yep. Tilly, thank you for being part of it. Bobby, thank you for being part of it. Our other special correspondent couldn't be a part of it, but you know, it just, that's how it aligns sometimes. But you know, everybody is a special correspondent if you come back, I guess. I don't know what I'm saying. But we love you, Weirdsville. We appreciate the 6 years support, 300-plus episodes. It's, you know, at 300 and only late on one episode, which, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
Pretty amazing, I got to say.
Yep. Every week.
And we really appreciate it. We hope you enjoyed this catch-up session, and we'll be back to our regular interviews next week. Once again, we really appreciate everybody's support. And if this is your first time listening, do follow us, subscribe to us, give us a like, and all of that, a rating, all the whatever it is. Contact your friends, tell them about the show. If you want to share your stories, with this episode, you see variety of stories. We just love good stories, and we love chatting with people. join us on the podcast, share your stories, get a hold of us through our email, wywspod@gmail.com, or through our social media outlets on What's Your Weird Story, Instagram, Facebook, X. I think we're even on Threads. Not that we check really the latter two, but, you know, it is a stream to get a hold of us. We appreciate you streaming here with us and for just, you know, making this the coolest thing I get to do every week, for sure.
Absolutely. Me too. Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. Well, guys, gosh, I don't know. There's so much to say, but also we said a whole lot. So I just want to again thank everybody for listening, and we will catch you next time. Here on the What's Your Weird Story podcast. I can barely speak. I did so good this entire episode, and I fumble on our name at the very end. All right, we'll catch you next time here on the What's Your Weird Story podcast. I'm Adam Beebe. That's Barry Johnston. That's Tilly. Bobby left already. That's Minnie, my cat, who's patting at my leg. We'll catch you next time. Until then, be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.